Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be in a listen-only mode for today's conference. After the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. To ask a question, please press star one, unmute your line, and record your name. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Chris Ciacca. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Welcome, everybody, to the IBM and Astron Virtual Job Fair. This is a bit of an experiment in itself, but we appreciate you joining us this morning or this afternoon, depending on where you are. Before we get started, it looks like most of you have figured out how to listen to this via the PC. There's also phone numbers you can also dial by clicking on the audio or the speaker icon in your browser. And there's also, of course, mobile apps, so you can watch the presentations from your BlackBerry, Android, or iPhones. As Kelly just mentioned, we will have a Q&A at the end of the event for the participants, but certainly you can begin asking questions in the chat just to the right of the presentation window, and as we come to the end of the event, we will take those questions as we have time for. With that, I'll just go now very quickly into the agenda. I'll change the slide here. So our first speaker will be the lab director for IBM Research, Dr. Matthias Kaiserswerth. He will give you a brief introduction to IBM Research and the Zurich lab. Then sitting next to me is Ton Engberson. He is the DOME project manager, and he will give you a good understanding of what the DOME project is, talking a little bit about the square kilometer array and why we call this the ultimate big data challenge. Then our partner in this project is Astron in the Netherlands, and we have the privilege to have Jean Giraud from Astron, who will talk about his company, as well as the town of Dwingeloo, which is where these jobs are actually based in the Netherlands. Then, kind of like your peers, we have two scientists that are working on the DOME project, and we'll switch gears and have a panel discussion with the two of them, where I'll just ask them some questions to set the stage for the Q&A later in the agenda. And then our last speaker will be Ronald Leuthen, who is also sitting next to me. And Ronald is the hiring manager and one of the scientists on the DOME project, and he'll talk about the skills that he's looking for on his team. So with that, I'd like to push it over to Dr. Kaiserswerth. Matthias, would you like to kick us off?
Yes, thanks a lot, Chris. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm the director of the Zurich Research Lab, which is the collaborator together with Astron in the Netherlands on this exciting project. If you look at the chart that you have in front of you, you will see that IBM Research is, of course, a lot more than just the Zurich Research Lab. It's a community of some 3,000 scientists and engineers across the world in 12 physical research labs, and then in many research collaborations, which are the green dots that you will see here on the map. Most exciting and the most recent additions were the labs in Kenya and in the collaboration that we also now have in South Africa around, in fact, the DOME project. And and as you know, the square kilometer array will be placed into the southern hemisphere in Africa, as well as some of it in Australia and New Zealand. So if we move on to the next page, six, you can see basically what kinds of skills are that you will work with in IBM Research. We have folks from natural sciences, be it chemistry, material science, physics, math, then engineering, electrical engineering, computer science, and a new emerging field which is called services science, which is a combination really of computer science, business, economics, and social sciences. And we do have some behavioral scientists, as you can see in the left upper corner, that really, really look at how people interact with computers and how to make computers more useful for the human. So that's a wide variety of skills that you will find in any university or other research organization. It really spans, other than humanities, everything that and we now even have some medical doctors in our Watson Research Lab in the United States. So it really spans a wide range of scientific disciplines. If we move on to the next chart, it will give you a little background on the IBM Zurich Research Lab, which is the oldest foreign research lab that IBM established 56 years ago, or actually this year we'll celebrate our 57th anniversary. So it got established as a European research lab to attract skills from across Europe, but we also have, in fact, skills from other parts of the world that work for us. It's, as you can see on the chart, it says 45 different nationalities. That's plus or minus. But it's the most international lab that you will find in IBM Research. We've become very prominent in the scientific world for the two Nobel Prizes in physics that we won back-to-back in 1986 for the invention of the scanning tunneling microscope, and in 1987 for the discovery of high-temperature superconductivity. We still have a strong effort in basic research in really nanotechnology and nanoscience, which not that we don't also do basic research in computer science and other areas, but the majority of folks work really in the nanosciences. And for that, we opened in 2011 a new facility, which is a very modern nanotechnology center, which is a public-private partnership together with ETH Zurich. Sits on our campus and has four professors from ETH with their staffs that conduct research projects in this facility, research projects they do on their own, but also projects that they do jointly with us. And doing projects jointly, in fact, is sort of one of the big focus items and part of our strategy, really, in IBM Research. So that means, essentially, the project with Astron is a poster child of such collaborative research. And we have ongoing, at present, about 90 different projects where we collaborate with partners in universities, industry, and government research organizations. If we move on to the next chart, it will give you sort of a little background as to why we think the DOME project, that's the name of the project that we're doing with Astron, is in fact one that will really change the way that we build computers in the future. If you look at historically, what we had is we had sort of at IBM is now 102 years old. When we got started with meat grinders and cheese slicers, but then very soon we really moved into what was called the tabulating systems era, using punched cards if you want to do such operations as a census and do some simple counting, really. Then with really the first computers, and in particular then with the System 360, what came really about was what's called the programmable systems era, which is what our industry is currently in, which is basically you use computers to automate certain back office functions, do your accounting, HR management, and other things. with sort of the fact that a lot of our world now is becoming sort of instrumented with sensors, and it's becoming a lot more intelligent, and IBM, in fact, has this vision of a smarter planet. We're moving into an era that we call really the era of big data, and the big data era leads to something that really is what we call the cognitive systems era. And I'll give an example of that. If you look at what IBM did last year with, 2 years ago, with the Watson computer that played in the game of Jeopardy and beat the two human contestants in a free question and answer game on television, that was the first time that the computer really showed some sort of cognitive capabilities. So it was able to understand fairly ambiguous questions from a broad area of topics and be able to answer them correctly. And if it didn't know the answer or didn't have enough confidence to give the answer, it wouldn't answer, because otherwise it would lose money as part of that game. And this is what we now call really the emergence and the beginning of the cognitive systems era. And the project on the Square Kilometer Array and the Dome Research Project really is a good example for such a really ultimate challenge in terms of big data that allows you to take information from many, many sensors, many antennas. You will hear more about it later in this presentation, and make sense of that and really learn about the origins of the universe. And that's what we really mean with now moving into the cognitive systems era. So if with that, I think I'm getting to the end of my part, I encourage you to listen to the other presentations. They're a lot more technical than what I had to say. I just wanted to give you an introduction to IBM Research and then be very interactive and ask questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thanks, Matthias. Now we'll go into the more details of the Dome project with Ton Engbersen. Ton, would you like to start us off?
Sure. Thank you, Chris. And welcome to everyone on the phone. Good morning, good afternoon. My name is Ton Engbersen. I am the manager here in IBM of the Dome project. And maybe we should talk a little bit over what this is all about. Some of you might have heard of the fact that the radio astronomy community in the world has decided and is working towards a goal of building a very large radio telescope, where part of the radio telescope will be in South Africa and other parts will be in Australia and parts in New Zealand and also little parts in some of the other countries in Africa, Madagascar, and some islands in between. So what do they want to do with this? I think the first thing which you want to understand is that when you build an antenna, you receive signals, you receive radio signals, and you probably remember that when you felt that your radio signal was too faint and you didn't hear the radio or the station good enough, you added a wire to your antenna, so you made it a bit larger, and oh wonder, suddenly you heard your radio a lot better. Now, that is very similar to what the people do here. They want to build a big antenna, where big means not something which is a very big structure in one piece, but it is more a structure which has hundreds and hundreds and thousands of antennas. And then all the signals of these antennas are fed together. They are composed together. In technical terms, we call this correlation. And with that, they hope to actually be able to see roughly what you see in this picture, there where it says first stars, about 400 million years. Because according to the current thinking, the current theory, our whole universe was starting with a big bang in about 13.7 billion years ago. And this started with very condensed matter, which was actually so condensed and so hot that there were only quantum fluctuations. Just think of the fact that there were not even atoms. They were just being formed. And during this time of inflation and after that, atoms came into existence, and lo and behold, it started to form galaxies and planets and everything else. And that are the things which we ultimately know. But one of the things which we also know is that when you calculate back, about this Big Bang, and you start trying to figure out, well, how did that actually happen, and what, given the current laws of nature, which we know, how should that have happened? Then, and then you look at all the stars and things which we know about in space. Then we come to this conclusion that there's an awful lot of stuff missing. I mean, missing in the form of energy, missing in the form of maybe weight or mass. Today, by a lack of a better term, they just call this dark energy because we kind of don't exactly know what it is. So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to receive the very faint signals which are still around when we can look far enough with very sensitive antennas about when these first stars, when these first galaxies were born, as far back as possible, actually make a map of how these things were back in those days and try to plot them, the map, all the way to where we are today and how we see them today. So can you move to the next chart? So hopefully we can actually answer questions with that from how do galaxies evolve and what is then that dark energy? Because lo and behold, right, we have in nature or in our laws, we have laws about maintenance of energy, that you cannot destroy, in a sense, energy. But when energy is missing, since the Big Bang to now, maybe this law is no longer true. And then you come to questions, was Einstein right, or is his theory just another step in moving forward? Maybe we will find more fundamental forces, more fundamental laws. In space, we have giant magnetic fields, and how do they come into existence? Who generates that? Black holes, stars, and of course the ultimate question, are we alone? Right? Are we alone, we as human beings, in this massive big space? Now, how do we do this? We build this square kilometer array. So think of an amount of antennas which altogether approximately have an aperture of 1 square kilometer. This is one. This is clearly the largest telescope. And as I already said, we'll build this in Australia and in Africa. But, you know, most of you very initially will think over, oh, yes, that are these dishes, right? Have a football cut over in the middle, and then we point them at the sky, and that is how we receive these signals. Well, technology has progressed, and largely these antennas today look like these things which you see here in the picture, which is roughly, it's almost a circle, 50, maybe 100 meters in diameter. And under these little blocks which you see here are little antennas which are about, 30, 40 centimeters high. They are covered here. These antennas are, of course, on a distance which makes sure that the wavelengths which we want to receive, that they are very receptible, very sensitive to that. And then we have lots and lots of those, approximately 500,000, maybe even more. Now, in addition to that, we will have also about 3,000 dishes, the ones which you are probably very familiar with, because they will receive the higher frequency signals, and we will also feed that all to these computers. Now, the real difficulty comes at the moment when we bring all these signals together, because all these antennas together, they only become a big antenna when we can take all the signals from them together, correlate these signals, and of course calibrate these signals, but then the real problem is there, because that generates about 14 exabytes of data per day. Now, I could make a little quiz now and ask you, do you know how much an exabyte is? And I guess in these days of Wikipedia, all of you will go to Wikipedia, or some of you might know it directly, and say, oh, that is easy, that's 10 to the 18th. So how much is 10 to the 18th, is then the question. I did a little bit of calculation, and then I came to the conclusion that you can actually express this in books. When you think of a book, which is something like an ordinary dictionary, a fairly thick book, 5-6 centimeters thick, and you give 150 of those books to every person on Earth, then these combined books have about 1 exabyte of letters in them. So that gives you a little bit of an impression of what an exabyte is. 14 exabytes is 14 times as much. So we talk about 1,000 books per person per day, per person on Earth. When we start computing that, when we start working on this with computers as we can extrapolate them from today, then we come to the conclusion that all of this will approximately take 7 gigawatts of energy. And at one side, of course, the question is, how do we get 7 gigawatts into these deserts in South Africa and Australia where we build these or want to build these things? The other question is, of course, do the astronomers want to actually pay the bill for the 7 gigawatts of power? Because that is not cheap either. Just for your information, 7 gigawatts is about the accumulated amount of energy generated by all the nuclear power plants in a country like Germany. So we started a couple of, I will say almost a year, 2 years ago, we came in contact with Astron. Astron came to us, and lo and behold, we started this almost 33 million dome project about a year ago. And part of this project, of course, also foresees that we will hire new promising and, I would say, exciting people who say, yeah, this is really what I want to do. Because look at it this way. We have equipped our whole world with more and more sensors. We all walk around with mobile phones which generate data, where we are, what we do, what we send around. And all this data has information. And where you can take a look at this information, where you can mine this information, where you can combine this information, you might derive enormous new insights. And we call that big data. Now, we, as people from IBM, where we think big data is a great thing for the future, we came to the conclusion that there is no bigger data project in the world than this SKA. This is big data on steroids, the biggest data you can get. So when you can solve this, then you can solve all the big data challenges for probably foreseeing 10, 15 years. So we started this project. Here is a nice picture. You see me standing there with the big key, which I hand over to Albert-Jan from Astron. He is the one who has a jacket. I didn't have a jacket, of course. And that was the opening of the Astron IBM Center for Exascale Technology in Dwingelo in the Netherlands. And there we do work. Can we go to the next floor, please? There we do work, actually, in three larger areas. First of all, and that will be obvious after I explain to you how much energy this machine takes, we have to find a way how to do this with much, much, much less energy. So things like microservers, very dense server packaging, very good cooling for this kind of servers, very high core count, very energy efficient is one thing where we're working on in the computing area, and of course accelerators. A lot of what the people do with these antenna signals are things like Fourier transformation, fast Fourier transformation. Can we actually accelerate these kind of things, and how do you do that? Then the data from the antennas has to come to the computers. Right? We cannot put the computer next to the antenna because computers have a lot of radiation when they work, and that is not what those antennas like. So we need a cable, or in this case actually a photonic connection between the antennas and the computers, and that we call that nanophotonics. How do we actually bring this data from the antennas to the computers in, again, a very energy-efficient mode? By the way, we have to do that almost real-time, because think of 14 exabytes of data. You don't store this on a disk or on a couple of disks, and then you say, and I'll process it tomorrow or the day after, right? Because what are you then going to look at the day after? So real-time is important, and even some more mathematically, exploratory work on compressive sampling. Can we actually do something on this data, and at what point can we do that so that we sample or that we compress the amount of data without actually losing our ability to find the origin of stars, etc.? And finally, once we have the data processed, there is roughly about a petabyte of data left per day, and we need to store that. That is what we keep for looking at or giving it to the astronomers a little bit later, and they can then experiment with this data, look at it in different ways, slice it, dice it, and do what they want. But you know, a petabyte per day isn't that easy either. And certainly when you don't want to spend a lot of money on the energy, we decided that maybe we want to put a lot of this data actually on tape, on magnetic tape. But then we might as well figure out a mechanism which learns by itself how astronomers use this data so that we can keep a little bit of the data on the hard disk. And when the astronomer touches that data because he wants to do something with this data, then we realize, aha, when he touches this data at this time, then he is likely to take the following data from the tape. So why don't we already call the tape, put it in the tape drive, and the astronomer actually has the idea that everything else is wonderful and that everything is actually on hard disks. Hard disks and phase change memory are things which you can actually put in multiple tiers, and you can do the same approach there, and that is what we call our storage stream. Now, finally, over all of that, we realized that we need some real deep system analysis. How do we put these things together? How do we build this? Can we actually change the algorithms and the hardware in such a way that everything works optimally? We have ample evidence that when you do that, you get much better throughput. So that is another stream. This is basically, these are the 7 work packages of DOME. And to that, to this DOME project, we have added a user platform, and one of our prominent members in the user platform is the Square Kilometer Array organization from South Africa, who is working very closely with us together, actually, in this area also. In the same way as Astron works with the Square Kilometer Array people and does the preparatory work for actually build the SKA. So with that, that's in a nutshell the overview of what DOME actually is. And I'll give back to Chris.
Great. Thanks, Ton. Now we'll switch gears to the Netherlands, where Jan Gerolt will talk about Astron and the town of Dwingeloo. All yours.
Okay, thank you, Chris, for the good introduction. I'm Jan Gerolt from Astron, indeed, in the Netherlands. On the first slide, you see a nice galaxy, by the way, but that's, of course, what we do astronomy and radio astronomy. On the next slide, slide 18, you see a nice aerial photograph of our institute. The Institute of Astron is in the middle of the national park. It's a really foresty area. If you would expand on this photograph, you will only see trees and forest and hay fields. Nice quiet area, which was selected more than 50 years ago as a good spot for radio astronomy because of radio quietness. That radio quietness has been polluted a little bit over the years, but it still is a nice place. But also on the right side, you see a photograph of the city of Groningen, which is only 30 minutes away, and that's only one of the cities that is close by. So we think we can benefit from a good, nice 200,000 inhabitant cities and benefit from the interesting quietness of the national park in this middle of Drenthe. Can you move the slide? So some key figures here are from our institute. NWO means that's the Dutch Science Foundation. They're giving us a base budget to run telescopes and run the institute. But on top of that, we traditionally acquire about 6.5 to 7.5 million out of various sources. One important source is European Union funding or local Dutch additional science funding to enhance our institute, enhance our instrumentation. So what we do get in additionally is mainly focused at new designs, new telescopes, new options, so really R&D work. And that is reflected into the staff. You see we have about 160 FTEs, of which a significant portion is academic, but also really people that actually build stuff or in our institute. Of these 160, that's about 60 people for R&D, which is the largest part of the institute. There is a radio astronomy group, of course. There's an observatory group that actually runs the telescopes, and of course there's staff, etc. But the R&D department is a very strong fraction, and that also differentiates us from normal university institutes that do radio astronomy. In this institute, we we do radio astronomy, but we particularly focus on design and build stuff and then give data to universities for further processing. Can you move a slide? So we make radio astronomical discoveries happen is our motto, our guideline, and that doesn't come for free. It's as Ton already explained earlier, we moved from building just metal 60 years ago or 70 years ago, one metal dish, a bit of engines, and one single receiver. That's not where we can do discoveries with these. We need to be more sensitive. We need to add more processing. We have to complement the traditional stuff with much more advanced components. In this R&D environment, we deal with antennas, receivers, signal processing machines, and then also software. So we actually cover the whole range of technology. Of course, we benefit from other universities and have strong connections with other institutes and universities, but we certainly want to keep hold of the whole chain, and we have to keep that in track, because otherwise we cannot rely on what you purchase off the shelf. It's the computer board that you see on this photograph is in the S8 of the newest FPGAs on. That was designed in-house. Firmware will be designed in-house. Software is designed in-house. Of course, the production itself will not be done in-house. The production of these sort of things was done, of course, in specific companies. So we do fundamental science for radio astronomy, that is, our astronomers, but also we built world-class observatories, and we have innovative technology. One example of these innovative technologies is that our technologies tend to be at the forefront of technology. So we have to do more and better than you can buy, and sometimes that results in the patents that are actually very very interesting for other fields. One example is the Wi-Fi patent that was originated at Astron, that a couple of years ago was granted $430 million out of the Wi-Fi community. So this was not, we didn't earn the $430 million, by the way, so I have to disappoint you on that one. It was awarded to a colleague that actually worked at this place. So we really can be at the forefront of technology. One other aspect that was highlighted by Son earlier is that as we do, we traditionally have a 1 or 2 or 14 metal telescopes. We're now moving to an IT, more computer telescope rather than just metal. We just recently finished a 40,000 antenna system, which we call a low frequency array. This 40,000 antenna system was connected up to a IBM supercomputer, and that is one of our pathfinders for the SK. One of the first things that is really in an IT big data telescope that is currently in operation in the Northern Netherlands, in Germany, Sweden, and France, and the UK. So this 40,000 antenna system is only one step. The next phase in the SK will be 500,000 antennas, and for the second phase of the SK2, we're actually contemplating a 50 million antenna system. These 50 million signals have to be processed, and the data has to be processed as was discussed earlier. Power efficient, processing efficient, cost efficient, and what have you. So we're really moving to a different phase in the radio astronomy. We're moving away from what you could say is sometimes a dusty environment of one astronomer and one big metal thing to a really high-tech IT system. Can you move to slide 21? What you see in slide 31 is that we're, as I explained earlier, we cannot just do this ourselves. We need private-public partnerships. We need connections to the industry, and these are, in this slide, local industries, but also larger industries like IBM, but not only IBM. These industries are important because they provide us with the production facility, provide us with knowledge. They will help us with staying at the forefront of technology. They will help us with advanced research and with this, with our community and our goals, we think we can actually enhance industry capabilities as well, as we try to demonstrate in the Dome project, where we work together with IBM to make the next step in handling big data. So that was a short introduction for me on Astron, and I give the floor to back to Chris.
Thanks, Jan Jarot. I appreciate that. You've made everyone in the room very nervous about how big you plan on scaling the antennas. So with the next part of the agenda now, we have a bit of a panel discussion with actually two of the scientists that are working on the Dome project in the Netherlands. So Rick and Jusik, are you both there?
Yes, we're here.
Yes.
Great. So so potentially if you want to apply to work for work on the Dome project, you'd certainly be working side by side with Rick and Jusik. So I thought we could do a quick introduction and ask them a few questions about what's a day in the life of a Dome scientist. So I guess, Jusik, for the first question, just so people have an understanding of your background, what's your education and how did you find out about this exciting project?
For my undergraduate degree, I studied mathematics at Seoul National University in South Korea. And afterwards, I decided to do a PhD in the U.S. I studied operations research at UC Berkeley. My work was focused on studying scheduling problems for grid computing environments. After my PhD, I went to France to do a postdoc. And during that postdoc, this topic was about studying access patterns for the linear accelerator in University of Paris 11. So I was interested in that kind of work. I found out about this opportunity through the IBM career website, and then I applied through online. And that's how I started the job.
Great. And Rick, what's your background?
So I've received my master's in electrical engineering from the Eindhoven University of Technology in the Netherlands. I graduated in the fields of computer architecture and embedded systems. And during my studies, I actually spent 1 year in Zurich at the IBM Research Lab there. I did two internships there. I focused on cryptography accelerators and on designing a new programming language. And that was also the time where I started to learn about the Dome project, and I got very interested in this, and that's where I decided to actually do a PhD in this project, and that's what I'm doing at the moment.
Right, yeah, so let's go into more detail now, and maybe Rick, you can start off. What specific projects on the Dome project are you working on?
So I'm part of the algorithms and machines part of the project. So what we really try to do is we want to create models and tooling to actually support the design space exploration for the square kilometer array. Basically, we want to figure out how can we really design the hardware and the software system both together to make sure that we get to an ideal platform. And one of the things I'm doing at the moment is I'm actually looking towards LOFAR, which is this radio telescope which has already been built here in the Netherlands. And I'm doing an analysis of this telescope to really figure out, well, do we understand the problems? What other problems do we have? And how can we learn from LOFAR what they've built and apply this towards a square kilometer array? And basically, especially because LOFAR is a pathfinder for the square kilometer array, and if we extend this, can we do that with the technologies they've used? Do we have to do things in a different way? Really ask questions like that.
Great. Jusik, and what part of the Dome project are you working on?
So I am working on the access pattern work package of the Dome project, which is basically designing the storage system that will be capable of storing the 1 petabyte per day that the after the data reduction for the SKA. So I'm involved in trying to find the most cost and energy efficient storage system design and by combining multiple device technologies. More specifically, we're trying to look at the access patterns for the how on the applications by looking at how the applications interact with the data to find the best way to position the data across the storage system so that we can have a very cost-efficient and energy-efficient storage system, yet meet all the requirements of the astronomical applications for the SKA.
Interesting. So, yeah, going to the next question, I mean, so what gets you out of bed in the morning? What keeps you guys excited about the project? Obviously, it's very challenging, but, what do you find interesting? Maybe, Yusuf, you can start off.
So the most interesting part about the Dome project for me is the multidisciplinary aspect of it. There are seven disciplines for the different work streams coming together to have a common goal of building this computing system that can for the SKA. And there are experts in many different every one of the fields that are involved, including my own. I learn from all these experts every day, learn something new every day, and so every morning I wonder what I'll learn today.
Great, and Rick, what do you find interesting about the project?
I have to agree that that it's really multidisciplinary. It's amazing. I really have to get back to all my electrical engineering books, towards my signal processing theory, everything I got in at the university. It's amazing to get back to all those things. But one of the things I really, really like about the project is that, well, obviously, the Square Kilometer Array is a really big international project. It's going to be built by various institutes in the world, and you can really be a part of it and trying to make this thing happen, and that we can actually start building this.
Yeah, I agree with you. For the last question, guys, maybe you can give our participants a little bit of a taste of what it's like living in the Netherlands. Both of you are young scientists. Yusuf, can you give a little bit of a taste of what it's like to live in the Netherlands?
Sure. Well, here I can start off with. So I'm a foreigner in the Netherlands, so it might give some kind of perspective to the people, to the foreign applicants. Well, if we start off, the town of Dwingeloo is a very quiet, submerged in nature. So if you're a nature type of person, you'll fit right in. Even if you're not, I mean, you're less than 2 hours away from Amsterdam, and like in 30 minutes you have like cities like very vibrant cities like Groningen, which Rick can elaborate on. Here, Dutch people are mostly very friendly, no language barriers, and culturally, the Dutch culture is very an interesting, unique culture that is very difficult to explain. So you'll have to see for yourselves.
Excellent. And Rick, I believe you live in one of these local cities, right?
Yes, that's right. So I'm originally from the south of the Netherlands. I always lived in Eindhoven. And what I really, really wanted to look for was actually a student city. So Groningen, it's got the university. It's a very lively city. There are lots of students living there, approximately 30,000. So you also see that from the life in Groningen itself. There are various festivals. There's a quite a few nice bars and nice places to go out. On the other side, it's a bit of an older city in the Netherlands, so the architecture is quite nice. And it's really an amazing city to live. And I think there are various more colleagues here at Aston, which are also living there. So once in a while, we meet up in the evenings to, celebrate somebody's birthday or do whatever. For the rest, I fill my personal time with rowing, so I joined the rowing club there to do some sports and to really be part of the city itself.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. I'm sure as we wrap up, some folks will have some more questions for you, so please stick around.
Okay.
Next, we're going to switch now to Ronald Leuten, who is one of the senior managers on the Dome project. And he is actually the hiring manager looking for these very unique skills for the Dome project. So, Ronald, maybe you can give our participants a little bit of a taste of what the job openings are and what skills you're seeking out.
Yes, thanks, Chris. To correct you, I am one of the hiring managers, not the hiring manager. Perhaps before I go into the skills, let me give you my perspective on the SKA. So to me, the SKA project is absolutely comparable to what is happening in CERN, In that we are going to build an instrument that is one of its kind. It takes a decade to plan, it takes about a decade to build, and it will run for 3 decades to do the science, where the science will be done by a global community, and the investment into this machine is huge, right? So the building of the instrument alone is currently estimated at 1.5 billion euros. And the actual construction will start in 2017, will finish in 2024. So you can actually make a career in SKA. Now, I've been working at IBM Research for 28 years and a bit, and I must say that without a doubt, this is the most exciting project that I have worked on. For me, the real challenge in SKA is one of scaling. So the interesting thing is that the SKA is using algorithms that are very well known. LOFAR, the instrument that Rick just mentioned, is operational. It was built by Astron, but that is only 1% of the, collecting area of SKA. And the scaling goes more than quadratically. So it will be more than 10,000 times as difficult to build SKA. So fundamentally, it's a problem of scaling. And to be very honest, today we actually don't know how to build SKA in a way that we can actually afford this, right? So Ton Engbersen mentioned if we just extrapolate based on today's technology, what energy we would use, it would be 7 gigawatts. And that is simply not an acceptable answer because we cannot pay the electricity bill to keep the machine running. So to go to more what we look for in terms of the number of people and the skills is we actually need to have breakthroughs on multiple dimensions in order to be able to figure out how to build SKA. So we're looking for people that can do out-of-the-box thinking, that are highly creative, that can do holistic thinking. And given the fact that it is a very multidisciplinary activity, we need people that are really good team players. And I think we are offering a very nice environment with many cultures, international team. And the aspect that I like about SKA is that it's also going to give us some answers on how the universe got formed. So it is somewhat easier to explain to your family, who may not be so technical, you know, what your purpose is in this project. So you can just tell them, you know, I'm going to discover how you came to be. And you may then ask the question, why is IBM doing this? Well, the projects that were chosen for DOME are roadmap technology development projects that are applicable both to the radio astronomy problem in SKA, but also for the IBM business needs that we see in the future. And so big data was mentioned once. I think that fundamentally this is a data problem everywhere. So it's data in terms of how we collect this, how we sample this, how we transport this, where we compute on this, and then finally how we store this and make this available to the science community around the planet. So I cannot go in too many details on all of the jobs given the time, and that I manage 2 out of the 7 projects. So I can talk about what I need in terms of skills for the P1 project, or the algorithms and machines, as well as the microserver project, which is P4. But we have a website where all the details for the open positions are available, and you see that on the slide 26, which is currently up. So in general, I think we need people that have good experience, skills in computer science, electrical engineering, hardware design, software design. System design skills are of good use. If you have an interest in radio astronomy, that certainly helps, right? So going to the job, which is the Alexa machines, then basically what we're looking for is somebody who is applying the SKA case study in the tool that we're developing that was mentioned earlier, this holistic modeling tool, where people with either a PhD student or even with a PhD degree can apply. Here we basically need people that are really good at system design, people who can really dream math, right? So really versed in this. And if we can find somebody who also has a good, solid interest in photonics, that would also be really great. For P4, the microserver, we're looking for a pre-doc or a postdoc with good skills in being able to hack Linux kernels, to do networking, so in general software skills, but also a good affinity to hardware. So if we talk about you need to set a couple of bits in the register, that should not be a challenge. Benchmarking, system management is also required for that that position. So chart number 26 actually shows a map of the kind of the top section of Europe around the Netherlands, and you see the Netherlands there with Amsterdam and this symbol called A for Astron, I guess, where the physical location is where we are hiring. There are good train connections from Amsterdam to go there, so that's easily accessible. And the best way to apply is to on this website, www.zurich.ibm.com/astron, you'll find a link on the page on the right-hand side that says Submit My Resume. So there you can click on the job that you find interesting and add your resume and some other details, submit, and then we will take a serious look at what you write there.
Great. Thanks, Ronald. So that wraps up the formal part of our agenda, and now we can open it up to Q&A. I know many of you are participating via PC, and you're listening to this conference through your speakers on your computer. So on the right-hand side, you can post some questions in the chat. And for folks on the phone, I'll ask the operator to explain how you can ask questions over the phone.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your line, and record your name. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your line, and record your name.
So we have one question that came through the chat, and the question is, how quickly will we get a response after somebody submits their resume? Someone in the room, perhaps?
And so we're really interested to get as soon as possible in contact with you and to discuss a lot of things one-to-one. So depending on how many CVs we will get, but I think in the next few days we will have the first look, so that it's possible that you will get an answer in the next week.
Excellent. Thanks, Oliver. We have another question that's coming up in the chat. Are these positions also open for people with a master's degree?
Yes, for what we call a pre-doc or a PhD student, the requirement is that you have a master's degree. So the answer is yes.
Excellent. And now we have another question in the chat regarding big data. What will be the parsing method to make all the big data meaningful?
That is a very, very difficult question, I think, where fundamentally we don't have yet the answer to that. I would actually say you have to think of this here as the antennas receive something which is almost only noise. And when you correlate all the antennas, then you actually might find out that not all the signals were noise, but you have to correlate them, right? And when you have half a million antennas, then you correlate half a million antennas with each other. That is part of the difficulty, part of the problem. And then out of that comes information which, with established algorithms which astronomers have used and looked at, we try to find out whether there is something interesting here. Now, in the past, very often what happened is that we made a map where we printed a map of what we saw, and the astronomers looked at this, I would say, false color map and decided, yeah, there is something interesting. Today, maybe for the SKA, maybe we actually need a computer system which looks at the data and decides whether there is something useful or interesting to look at. Because there is so much data that we probably don't have enough astronomers in the world to look at all the data. I hope that answered the question a little bit, but I don't think that we have the algorithm already casted in concrete how to do that.
Great. We have another question regarding, is it possible to do short-term internships?
Yes, it is also possible to do short-term internships. We currently have a 6-month internship position open. So also feel free to submit your CV, just remarking that you're interested in an internship.
We have another question. Are the pre-doc positions related to a given university, or does one have to look for a university and supervisor by themselves?
So typically the way that we at IBM deal with it is that the PhD student is responsible to find the university and professor him or herself. But we definitely give help and guidance in this. But we don't dictate this. So there is plenty of flexibility there.
We have another question coming in. How many job openings are there on the project? And how big is the team?
So the current team between IBM and Astron is like 25 people. And we will grow that by another 6-7, so we currently have 6 job openings, but there will be some more phasing up of things over the next couple of years. So I think finally we'll get to a team of like 35 people working just on the Dome project between IBM and Astron.
Great. We have a question here about Watson. Will we be using Watson to analyze all of the data?
That is currently not our plan, but I do suggest you submit your resume because you're doing out-of-the-box thinking. I like that.
We have another question here. What kinds of computing power are required to process all of the information?
So if we were to use standard supercomputers to process the data, which is not a good idea, but just to get a feel, we would need, I think, in the order of 4 to 8 exascale machines. Now, an exascale machine does not exist today. The HPC community is planning to build one. According to the earliest expectations, would be available around 2018. Practically, it will probably be more like 2020. But there will be only one machine like that, and definitely not 10. And definitely, these machines would not be dedicated for SKA because the cost would be through the roof. So that's an example of why we need this fundamental innovation and breakthroughs to solve this.
Right. I have another question. If someone is in their last semester of master's, is it okay for them to apply? Do they reduce their chances of consideration?
I think this is the right time to apply for a PhD position, yes.
Yeah.
So.
Right. If someone is interested in big data, should they also apply?
Definitely.
Another question. Storing the data in distributed formats
Have we explored Hadoop, Hive, NoSQL, and are we using existing storage technologies from IBM?
I don't think that Hadoop is really that applicable, but we are looking at all forms of being able to store data, yes.
And from a storage technology, are we looking at existing IBM storage technologies?
In some sense, we extend the current existing technologies, right? So tape was mentioned. The new thing would be storage class memory. And traditional hard drives can also be used.
That's right. But there is not necessarily an focus on that we have to use IBM technology, right? This is a more fundamental, call it a more fundamental research project than that we take here off-the-shelf IBM technology and say that is what it should be.
Great. I just got another question here. Are there going to be positions that are open on the Astron side for people with less skills in electrical engineering and signal processing and maybe more in astronomy?
Maybe I should answer that question.
Yes,
we at Nobly have we have regular positions in astronomy and other fields. So I encourage you to check our website for positions. I didn't check it today, but we regularly have openings for other positions.
Great. Operator, any questions in the queue on the phone?
Once again, if you would like to ask a question on the phone lines, please press star 1, unmute your line, and record your name.
We got one more question coming in from the chat. What specialty should have a candidate for these job openings?
Again, the best is that you just look on the website where there are very detailed skill and job descriptions that will indicate what specialties are required.
But I think in addition to this, you know, we are looking for really high passion and people who are able to think outside of the box.
For the access pattern opening, some of the techniques that I use on a daily basis is statistics geared toward machine learning, some simulation, mathematical programming, queuing theory, and some operating system knowledge, among many other things. So, yeah.
So when you have all of that, you're an outstanding candidate, right?
I got two more questions coming in, guys. How is the reaching power of the SKA receiving signals? It has the capability of receiving what kind of signals?
The SKA is just receiving radio signals out of space in the range of slightly over 70 megahertz all the way to 10, maybe 20 gigahertz. And we have different antenna systems for the different, I would say, for different large bands. So for the band which is roughly below 400, I think it is 400 megahertz, we have sparse aperture arrays. And then for the higher bands up to about 3 gigahertz, we do more dense aperture arrays. And then over 3 gigahertz, that is really the range where we think that it will be most appropriate to have dishes. Now, this is not cast in concrete. This is something which is being discussed and decided as we're going. There are several experiments going on to find out what is the best way and the most economical way, both from power and from constructing it, and power being total cost of ownership, how to operate it, etc., over the years.
We just got another question coming in. It says, I'm working as an assistant professor of electronics and working on molecular electronics for high-speed applications. How can I contribute in this project? He said he's already submitted his CV. Are there any other ways for him to contribute?
So the other ways to contribute if you are not applying for a job is to think about joining the DOME user platform, right? So for especially for universities, but also for companies, we have the user platform there to be able to contribute in your area of interest to the Dome platform, but also to benefit from the innovation that is being done within that Dome project.
Great. We have another question that just came in. Are skills related to RF microwave engineering useful at a PhD level?
Gerald, can you answer that question?
Yeah, I think the answer will be yes. Of course, RF and microwave engineering will be useful, but I have to give you a but as well. I'm a microwave engineer, and if you've been in microwave engineering for some time, it is a difficult switch to high performance computing or software or anything related to these positions. The photonic position, by the way, is closer to microwave knowledge and closer to hardware. So maybe David should apply for that position, and we certainly will consider that.
Great. And we have a question maybe for Oliver regarding salary. What is the approximate salary for the photonics tech R&D engineer and other positions? Is it closer to industry or to academic levels?
So the individual salary is depending on the job role and your skill set. But, you know, our salary level is linked to the academic and astronaut as well. So I think it is more compared to the industrial market.
Right. Excellent. I don't see any other questions coming in the chat. Does anyone else have any other questions?
We do have a question on the phone line. Would you like to take that?
Sure.
Okay. You asked a question. Your line is now open. Yes, your line is open. You may ask your question.
Oh, hi. My name is Avinash Tomar, and I saw the vacancies on the project website, but currently, as I see them, they are more like signal processing or electrical engineer related positions. Do we have anything more related to computation, students for computational majors? As we talked about that, this is like the ultimate challenge for big data, but the positions that I see right now, they are mainly they are closely connected to establishing the infrastructure for processing data, but would there be any roles for computational major students which are more related to regarding developing the algorithms for handling that data rather than the infrastructure? That is my question for now. And congratulations on this big project. This is really awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So definitely, yes, I think within the algorithms and machines, we are addressing exactly how to deal with big data, develop new algorithms on how to do that, and do design space exploration on how to build the best architecture for SKA, but also the best architecture for big data machines within IBM. So that would be the place for you to submit your CV. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for your question. We got two more questions that came in. Would you support a collaboration for an internship towards a master's thesis in the field of big data?
Yes.
Short and sweet. More of a technical question. Will the data be stored for each antenna of the SKA?
No, I hope not.
Nope.
because that would that then we have to store the 14 exabytes per day.
So part of the project will involve developing smarter ways to filter out what data we keep and what data we don't keep. Another technical question. What other achievements are you hoping to find besides recreating the Big Bang? Green computing, faster storage, etc.?
I think the achievement which we like to achieve, which we like to see, is that we are able at the end of the run to very efficiently build systems which can deal with big data analysis, with big data storage, with big data processing.
Another way you can look at it is to say, if you look at the way that we currently build data centers and you take a current data center and you say this has a performance of X and a energy consumption of Y, then we hope to get to keep the performance at X and get the energy consumption down by a factor of 100. Right? And that will have a big impact on our society.
Great. Any other calls, any other questions from the phone operator?
We have no further questions at this time.
Wait, just one more question just came in, guys. I'm a PhD student in Brazil. My line of research involves intelligent systems, semantic web, and open data. Any chance along these lines for an interest in the Dome project? I think we'll...
It depends a little bit in what you have done in your PhD. I think what you can do is just send your resume, and we'll promise you we'll take a good look at that. And when you're a PhD student, I assume that at some point you will finish your PhD. So as a postdoc, this would be a potential job offering or job opening which we can think about. But it really depends a little bit more on the details, because intelligent systems, semantic web, and open data are, of course, very high-level concepts.
And a more technical question also, do you have any preferred accelerator architectures, or are you looking at everything under the sun?
For the time being, I would say we are looking at everything under the sun, but we are certainly looking at graphics processors, whether that is the right approach. We're certainly looking at field programmable gate arrays, whether that's the right approach. And we are looking at some of our own technology where we have been playing around with for a couple of years, whether that might help. But it is really open in the sense that we have to solve a not everyday problem. As Ronald just said, a factor of 100 less in
energy
consumption, that is the minimum.
So I don't have a preferred architecture, but I do have some suggestions on where to start when you think about accelerators. So my view is we should start at the data and not at compute, and we should look at it from like a data flow perspective rather than the old traditional Van Neumann way of thinking.
Great, and just two last questions it looks like came in. Do we provide any training programs for data analysis to the candidates who have a keen interest and want to contribute?
I think we need to think about that one. It's an interesting question. So send us your CV, and we'll have a discussion.
Excellent. And I guess just to end up, what sparked the idea for the Dome project?
Well, I actually am substantially responsible for getting this whole idea of the Dome together. I discovered the SKA project idea about 10 years ago, and quickly found out through very capable IBMers in the Netherlands. And by the way, I'm Dutch as well, although I've worked here in Switzerland for 28 years. But I kept my ties to the Holland intact. And I discovered that Astron is actually a world-renowned institute. And that to me looked like a good way to get involved with SKA. So over the past 8 years, I have made three attempts to get engaged with Astron in some formal project. And in the third attempt, it finally came together, where about 2.5 years ago, we had a fundamental meeting with the director of Astron here in our lab. And various projects were discussed on how we might help the challenge of SKA, and that is how this all got together. So the spark, I think, happened at multiple places around the same time, but it was having the right people with, you know, similar ideas at the same time, at the same place, that really made this happen.
We had one other question that just snuck in. Are we considering working with other sites that have radio telescopes? Maybe Jan Albert, you can comment?
All right. Jan Kerold, yes.
Yeah.
Well, ASTRONDA works with other radio telescopes more than only the SKA. So I already mentioned the LOFA telescope, but also we have tight relations with telescopes in Australia that are currently in operation, and we certainly will plan to share software and hardware ideas with other institutes. But the answer is yes.
Great.
Yeah, even in DOME, we just, I think 2 weeks ago, we announced that we have now DOME South Africa that is being extended into the program, where we formalize the collaboration with the South African team.
Excellent. Operator, any last calls on the any last questions on the phones?
We have no further questions at this time.
Great. Thanks. I appreciate everyone that participated in asking questions. We look forward to seeing your resumes, and maybe look forward to working with you someday. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for participating in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time. stand by. Your conference call will begin in approximately 5 minutes. Please continue to stand by. Stand by. Your conference call will begin momentarily. Please continue to stand by. Welcome and thank you for standing by. All participants will be in a listen-only mode for today's conference. After the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. To ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your line, and record your name. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Chris Siaka. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Welcome, everybody, to the IBM and Astron Virtual Job Fair. This is a bit of an experiment in itself, but we appreciate you joining us this morning or this afternoon, depending on where you are. Before we get started, it looks like most of you have figured out how to listen to this via the PC. There's also phone numbers you can also dial by clicking on the audio or the speaker icon in your browser. And there's also, of course, mobile apps, so you can watch the presentations from your BlackBerry, Android, or iPhones. As Kelly just mentioned, we will have a Q&A at the end of the event for the participants, but certainly you can begin asking questions in the chat just to the right of the presentation window, and as we come to the end of the event, we will take those questions as we have time for. With that, I'll just go now into the very quickly into the agenda. I'll change the slide here. So our first speaker will be the lab director for IBM Research, Dr. Matthias Kaiserswerth. He will give you a brief introduction to IBM Research and the Zurich Lab. Then sitting next to me is Ton Engbersen. He is the DOME project manager, and he will give you a good understanding of what the DOME project is, talking a little bit about the square kilometer array and why this is such, why we call this the ultimate big data challenge. Then our partner in this project is Astron in the Netherlands, and we have the privilege to have Jean Giraud from Astron, who will talk about his company, as well as the town of Dwingeloo, which is where these jobs are actually based in the Netherlands. Then, kind of like your peers, we have two scientists that are working on the DOME project, and we'll switch gears and have a panel discussion with the two of them, where I'll just ask them some questions to set the stage for the Q&A later in the agenda. And then our last speaker will be Ronald Leuten, who is also sitting next to me. And Ronald is the hiring manager and one of the scientists on the DOME project, and he'll talk about the skills that he's looking for on his team. So with that, I'd like to push it over now to Dr. Kaiserswerth. Matthias, would you like to kick us off?
Yes, thanks a lot, Chris. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm the director of the Zurich Research Lab, which is the collaborator together with Astron in the Netherlands on this this exciting project. If you look at the chart that you have in front of you, you will see that IBM Research is of course a lot more than just the Zurich Research Lab. It's a community of some 3,000 scientists and engineers across the world in 12 physical research labs, and then in many research collaborations, which are the green dots that you will see here on the map. Most exciting and the most recent additions were the labs in Kenya and in the collaboration that we also now have in South Africa around, in fact, the DOME project. And and as you know, the square kilometer array will be placed into the southern hemisphere in Africa, as well as some of it in Australia and New Zealand. So if we move on to the next page, 6, you can see basically what kinds of skills are that you will work with in IBM Research. We have folks from natural sciences, be it chemistry, material science, physics, math, then engineering, electrical engineering, computer science, and a new emerging field which is called services science, which is a combination really of computer science, business, economics, and social sciences. And we do have some behavioral scientists, as you can see in the left upper corner, that really, really look at how people interact with computers and how to make computers more useful for the human. So that's a wide variety of skills that you will find in any university or other research organization. It really spans, other than humanities, everything that and we now even have some medical doctors in our Watson Research Lab in the United States. So it really spans a wide range of scientific disciplines. If we move on to the next chart, it will give you a little background on the IBM Zurich Research Lab, which is the oldest foreign research lab that IBM established 56 years ago, or actually this year we'll celebrate our 57th anniversary. So it got established as a European research lab to attract skills from across Europe, but we also have, in fact, skills from other parts of the world that work for us. It's, as you can see on the chart, it says 45 different nationalities. That's plus or minus. But it's the most international lab that you will find in IBM Research. We've become very prominent in the scientific world for the two Nobel Prizes in physics that we won back-to-back in 1986 for the invention of the scanning tunneling microscope, and in 1987 for the discovery of high-temperature superconductivity. We still have a strong effort in basic research in really nanotechnology and nanoscience, which not that we don't also do basic research in computer science and other areas, but the majority of folks work really in the nanosciences. And for that, we opened in 2011 a new facility, which is a very modern nanotechnology center, which is a public-private partnership together with ETH Zurich. It's on our campus, and it has four professors from ETH with their staffs that conduct research projects in this facility, research projects they do on their own, but also projects that they do jointly with us. And doing projects jointly, in fact, is sort of one of the big focus items and part of our strategy, really, in IBM Research. So that means, essentially, the project with Astron is a poster child of such collaborative research. And we have ongoing at present about 90 different projects that where we collaborate with partners in universities, industry, and government research organizations. If we move on to the next chart, it will give you sort of a little background as to why we think the DOME project, that's the name of the project that we're doing with Astron, is in fact one that will really change the way that we build computers in the future. If you look at historically, what we had is we had sort of at IBM is now 102 years old. When we got started, it was meat grinders and cheese slicers, but then very soon we really moved into what was called the tabulating systems era, using punched cards if you want to do such operations as a census and do some simple counting, really. Then with really the first computers, and in particular then with the System 360, what came really about was what's called the programmable systems era, which is what our industry is currently in, which is basically you use computers to automate certain back-office functions, do your accounting, HR management, and other things. with sort of the fact that a lot of our world now is becoming sort of instrumented with sensors, and it's becoming a lot more intelligent. And IBM, in fact, has this vision of a smarter planet. We're moving into an era that we call really the era of big data, and the big data era leads to something that really is what we call the cognitive systems era. And I'll give an example of that. If you look at what IBM did last year with, 2 years ago, with the Watson computer that played in the game of Jeopardy and beat the two human contestants in a free question and answer game on television, that was the first time that the computer really showed some sort of cognitive capabilities. So it was able to understand fairly ambiguous questions from a broad area of topics and be able to answer them correctly. And if it didn't know the answer or didn't have enough confidence to give the answer, it wouldn't answer, because otherwise it would lose money as part of that game. And this is what we now call really the emergence and the beginning of the cognitive systems era. And the project on the Square Kilometer Array and the Dome Research Project really is a good example for such a really ultimate challenge in terms of big data that allows you to take information from many, many sensors, many antennas. You'll hear about it later in this presentation, and make sense of that and really learn about the origins of the universe. And that's what we really mean with now moving into the cognitive systems era. So if with that, I think I'm getting to the end of my part, I encourage you to listen to the other presentations. They're a lot more technical than what I had to say. I just wanted to give you an introduction to IBM Research and then be very interactive and ask questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thanks, Matthias. Now we'll go into the more details of the Dome project with Ton Engberson. Ton, would you like to start us off?
Sure. Thank you, Chris, and welcome to everyone on the phone. Good morning, good afternoon. My name is Ton Engberson. I am the manager here in IBM of the Dome project, and maybe we should talk a little bit over what this is all about. Some of you might have heard of the fact that the radio astronomy community in the world has decided and is working towards a goal of building a very large radio telescope, where part of the radio telescope will be in South Africa and other parts will be in Australia and parts in New Zealand and also little parts in some of the other countries in Africa, Madagascar, and some islands in between. So what do they want to do with this? I think the first thing which you want to understand is that when you build an antenna, you receive signals, you receive radio signals, and you probably remember that when you felt that your radio signal was too faint and you didn't hear the radio or the station good enough, you added a wire to your antenna, so you made it a bit larger, and oh wonder, suddenly you heard your radio a lot better. Now, that is very similar to what the people do here. They want to build a big antenna, where big means not something which is a very big structure in one piece, but it is more a structure which has hundreds and hundreds and thousands of antennas, and then all the signals of these antennas are fed together. They are composed together. In technical terms, we call this correlation. And with that, they hope to actually be able to see roughly what you see in this picture, there where it says first stars, about 400 million years. Because according to the current thinking, the current theory, our whole universe was starting with a big bang in about 13.7 billion years ago. And this started with very condensed matter, which was actually so condensed and so hot that there were only quantum fluctuations. Just think of the fact that there were not even atoms. They were just being formed. And during this time of inflation and after that, atoms came into existence, and lo and behold, it started to form galaxies and planets and everything else, and that are the things which we ultimately know. But one of the things which we also know is that when you calculate back, about this Big Bang, and you start trying to figure out, well, how did that actually happen, and what, given the current laws of nature which we know, how should that have happened? Then, and then you look at all the stars and things which we know about in space, then we come to this conclusion that there's an awful lot of stuff missing. I mean, missing in the form of energy, missing in the form of maybe weight or mass. Today, by a lack of a better term, they just call this dark energy because we kind of don't exactly know what it is. So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to receive the very faint signals which are still around when we can look far enough with very sensitive antennas about when these first stars, when these first galaxies were born, as far back as possible, actually make a map of how these things were back in those days and try to plot then the map all the way to where we are today and how we see them today. So can you move to the next chart? So hopefully we can actually answer questions with that from how do galaxies evolve and what is then that dark energy? Because lo and behold, right, we have in nature or in our laws, we have laws about maintenance of energy, that you cannot destroy, in a sense, energy, but when energy is missing, since the Big Bang to now, maybe this law is no longer true. And then you come to questions, was Einstein right, or is his theory just another step in moving forward? Maybe we will find more fundamental forces, more fundamental laws. In space, we have giant magnetic fields, and how do they come into existence? Who generates that? Black holes, stars, and of course the ultimate question, are we alone? Right? Are we alone, we as human beings, in this massive big space? Now, how do we do this? We build this square kilometer array. So think of an amount of antennas which altogether approximately have an aperture of 1 square kilometer. This is one. This is clearly the largest telescope. And as I already said, we'll build this in Australia and in Africa. But, you know, most of you, very initially, will think over, oh, yes, that are these dishes, right? Have a football cut over in the middle, and then we point them at the sky, and that is how we receive these signals. Well, technology has progressed, and largely these antennas today look like these things which you see here in the picture, which is roughly, I would say it's almost a circle, let's say 50, maybe 100 meters in diameter. And under these little blocks which you see here are little antennas which are about, I would say, 30, 40 centimeters high. They are covered here. These antennas are, of course, on a distance which makes sure that the wavelengths which we want to receive, that they are very receptive, very sensitive to that. And then we have lots and lots of those, approximately 500,000, maybe even more. Now, in addition to that, we will have also about 3,000 dishes, the ones which you are probably very familiar with, because they will receive the higher frequency signals, and we will also feed that all to these computers. Now, the real difficulty comes at the moment when we bring all these signals together, because all these antennas together, they only become a big antenna when we can take all the signals from them together, correlate these signals, and of course calibrate these signals, but then the real problem is there, because that generates about 14 exabytes of data per day. Now, I could make a little quiz now and ask you, do you know how much an exabyte is? And I guess in these days of Wikipedia, all of you will go to Wikipedia, or some of you might know it directly, and say, oh, that is easy, that's 10 to the 18th. So how much is 10 to the 18th, is then the question. I did a little bit of calculation, and then I came to the conclusion that you can actually express this in books. When you think of a book, which is something like an ordinary dictionary, a fairly thick book, 5-6 centimeters thick, and you give 150 of those books to every person on Earth, then these combined books have about 1 exabyte of letters in them. So that gives you a little bit of an impression of what an exabyte is. 14 exabytes is 14 times as much, so we talk about 1,000 books per person per day, per person on Earth. When we start computing that, when we start working on this with computers as we can extrapolate them from today, then we come to the conclusion that all of this will approximately take 7 gigawatts of energy. And at one side, of course, the question is, how do we get 7 gigawatts into these deserts in South Africa and Australia where we build these or want to build these things? The other question is, of course, do the astronomers want to actually pay the bill for the 7 gigawatts of power? Because that is not cheap either. Just for your information, 7 gigawatts is about the accumulated amount of energy generated by all the nuclear power plants in a country like Germany. So we started two years ago, we came in contact with Astron. Astron came to us, and long and behold, we started this almost 33 million dome project about a year ago. And part of this project, of course, also foresees that we will hire new promising and, I would say, exciting people who say, yeah, this is really what I want to do. Because look at it this way. We have equipped our whole world with more and more sensors. We all walk around with mobile phones which generate data, where we are, what we do, what we send around. And all this data has information, and where you can take a look at this information, where you can mine this information, where you can combine this information, you might derive enormous new insights, and we call that big data. Now, we, as people from IBM, where we think big data is a great thing for the future, we came to the conclusion that there is no bigger data project in the world than this SKA. This is big data on steroids, the biggest data you can get. So when you can solve this, then you can solve all the big data challenges for the foreseeing 10, 15 years. So we started this project. Here is a nice picture. You see me standing there with the big key, which I hand over to Albert-Jan from Astron. He is the one who has a jacket. I didn't have a jacket, of course. And that was the opening of the Astron IBM Center for Exascale Technology in Dwingelo in the Netherlands. And there we do work. Can we go to the next floor, please? There we do work, actually, in three larger areas. First of all, and that will be obvious after I explain to you how much energy this machine takes, we have to find a way how to do this with much, much, much less energy. So things like microservers, very dense server packaging, very good cooling for this kind of servers, very high core count, very energy efficient is one thing where we're working on in the computing area, and of course accelerators. A lot of what the people do with these antenna signals are things like Fourier transformation, fast Fourier transformation. Can we actually accelerate these kind of things, and how do you do that? Then the data from the antennas has to come to the computers. Right? We cannot put the computer next to the antenna because computers have a lot of radiation when they work, and that is not what those antennas like. So we need a cable, or in this case actually a photonic connection between the antennas and the computers, and that we call that nanophotonics. How do we actually bring this data from the antennas to the computers in, again, a very energy-efficient mode? By the way, we have to do that almost real-time, because think of 14 exabytes of data. You don't store this on a disk or on a couple of disks, and then you say, and I'll process it tomorrow or the day after, right? Because what are you then going to look at the day after? So real-time is important. And even some more mathematically, exploratory work on compressive sampling. Can we actually do something on this data? And at what point can we do that so that we sample or that we compress the amount of data without actually losing our ability to find the origin of stars, etc.? And finally, once we have the data processed, there is roughly about a petabyte of data left per day, and we need to store that. That is what we keep for looking at or giving it to the astronomers a little bit later, and they can then experiment with this data, look at it in different ways, slice it, dice it, and do what they want. But you know, a petabyte per day isn't that easy either. And certainly when you don't want to spend a lot of money on the energy, we decided that maybe we want to put a lot of this data actually on tape, on magnetic tape. But then we might as well figure out a mechanism which learns by itself how astronomers use this data so that we can keep a little bit of the data on an hard disk. And when the astronomer touches that data because he wants to do something with this data, then we realize, aha, when he touches this data at this time, then he is likely to take the following data from the tape. So why don't we already call the tape, put it in the tape drive, and the astronomer actually has the idea that everything else is wonderful and that everything is actually on hard disks. Hard disks and phase change memory are things which you can actually put in multiple tiers, and you can do the same approach there, and that is what we call our storage stream. Now, finally, over all of that, we realized that we need some real deep system analysis. How do we put these things together? How do we build this? Can we actually change the algorithms and the hardware in such a way that everything works optimally? We have ample evidence that when you do that, you get much better throughput. So that is another stream. This is basically, these are the 7 work packages of DOME. And to that, to this DOME project, we have added a user platform, and one of our prominent members in the user platform is the Square Kilometer Array organization from South Africa, who is working very closely with us together, actually, in this area also. That's in the same way as Astron works with the Square Kilometer Array people and does the preparatory work for actually build the SKA. So with that, that's in a nutshell the overview of what DOME actually is. And I'll give back to Chris.
Great. Thanks, Ton. Now we'll switch gears to the Netherlands, where Jan Geroldt will talk about Astron and the town of Dwingeloo. All yours.
Okay, thank you, Chris, for the good introduction. I'm Jan Geroldt from Astron, indeed, in the Netherlands. On the first slide, you see a nice galaxy, by the way, but that's because we do astronomy and radio astronomy. On the next slide, slide 18. You see a nice aerial photograph of our institute. The Institute of Astron is in the middle of the national park. It's a really foresty area. If you would expand on this photograph, you will only see trees and forest and hay fields. Nice quiet area, which was selected more than 50 years ago as a good spot for radio astronomy because of radio quietness. That radio quietness has been polluted a little bit over the years, but it still is a nice place. But also on the right side, you see a photograph of the city of Groningen, which is only 30 minutes away, and that's only one of the cities that is close by. So we think we can benefit from a good, nice 200,000 inhabitant cities and benefit from the interesting quietness of the national park in this middle of Drenthe. Can you move the slide? So some key figures here are from our institute. NWO means that's the Dutch Science Foundation. They're giving us a base budget to run telescopes and run the institute. But on top of that, we traditionally acquire about 6.5 to 7.5 million out of various sources. One important source is European Union funding or local Dutch additional science fundings to enhance our institute, enhance our instrumentation. So what we do get in additionally is mainly focused at new designs, new telescopes, new options, so really R&D work. And that is reflected into the staff. You see we have about 160 FTEs, of which a significant portion is academic, but also really people that actually build stuff or in our institute. Of these 160, it's about 60 people for R&D, which is the largest part of the institute. There is a radio astronomy group, of course. There's an observatory group that actually runs the telescopes, and of course there's staff, etc. But the R&D department is a very strong fraction, and that also differentiates us from normal university institutes that do radio astronomy. In this institute, we do radio astronomy, but we particularly focus on design and build stuff and then give data to the universities for further processing. Can you move the slide? So we make radio astronomical discoveries happen is our motto, our guideline, and that doesn't come for free. It's as Ton already explained earlier, we moved from building just metal 60 years ago or 70 years ago, one metal dish, a bit of engines, and one single receiver. That's not where we can do discoveries with these. We need to be more sensitive. We need to add more processing. We have to complement the traditional stuff with much more advanced components. In this R&D environment, we deal with antennas, receivers, signal processing machines, and then also software. So we actually cover the whole range of technology. Of course, we benefit from other universities and have strong connections with other institutes and universities, but we certainly want to keep hold of the whole chain, and we have to keep that in track, because otherwise we cannot rely on what you purchase off the shelf. It's the computer board that you see on this photograph is in has eight of the newest FPGAs on. That was designed in-house. Firmware will be designed in-house. Software is designed in-house. Of course, the production itself will not be done in-house. The production of these sort of things was done, of course, in specific companies. So we do fundamental science for radio astronomy, that is our astronomers, but also we built world-class observatories, and we have innovative technology. One example of these innovative technologies is that our technologies tend to be at the forefront of technology. So we have to do more and better than you can buy, and sometimes that results in patents that are actually very, very interesting for other fields. One example is a Wi-Fi patent that was originated at Astron that a couple of years ago was granted $430 million out of the Wi-Fi community. So this was not, we didn't earn the $430 million, by the way, so I have to disappoint you on that one. It was awarded to a colleague that actually worked at this place. So we really can be at the forefront of technology. One other aspect that was highlighted by Tom earlier is that as we do, we traditionally have a 1 or 2 or 14 metal telescopes. We're now moving to an IT, more computer telescope rather than just metal. We just recently finished a 40,000 antenna system, which we call a low frequency array. This 40,000 antenna system was connected up to a IBM supercomputer, and that is one of our pathfinders for the SK. One of the first things that is really in an IT big data telescope that is currently in operation in the Northern Netherlands, in Germany, Sweden, and France, and the UK. So this 40,000 antenna system is only one step. The next phase in the SK will be 500,000 antennas, and for the second phase of the SK2, we're actually contemplating a 50 million antenna system. These 50 million signals have to be processed, and the data has to be processed as was discussed earlier. Power efficient, processing efficient, cost efficient, and what have you. So we're really moving to a different phase in the radio astronomy. We're moving away from what you could say the dusty environment of one astronomer and one big metal thing to a really high-tech IT system. Can you move to slide 21? What you see in slide 31 is that we're, as I explained earlier, we cannot just do this ourselves. We need to private-public partnerships. We need connections to the industry, and these are, in this slide, local industries, but also larger industries like IBM, but not only IBM.
these industries are important because they provide us with the production facility, provide us with knowledge. They will help us with staying at the forefront of technology. They will help us with advanced research. And with this, with our community and our goals, we think we can actually enhance industry capabilities as well, as we try to demonstrate in the Dome project, where we work together with IBM to make the next step in handling big data. So that was a short introduction for me on Astron, and I give the floor to back to Chris.
Thanks, Jan Jarolta. I appreciate that. You've made everyone in the room very nervous about how big you plan on scaling the antennas. So with the next part of the agenda now, we have a bit of a panel discussion with actually two of the scientists that are working on the Dome project in the Netherlands. So Rick and Jusik, are you both there?
Yes, we're here.
Yes.
Great. So so potentially if you want to apply to work for work on the Dome project, you'd certainly be working side by side with Rick and Jusik. So I thought we could do a quick introduction and ask them a few questions about what's a day in the life of a Dome scientist. So I guess, Jusik, for the first question, just so people have an understanding of your background, what's your education and how did you find out about this exciting project?
So I, for my undergraduate degree, I studied mathematics at Seoul National University in South Korea. And afterwards, I decided to do a PhD in the U.S. I studied operations research at UC Berkeley. My work was focused on studying scheduling problems for grid computing environments. After my PhD, I went to France to do a postdoc. And during that postdoc, this topic was about studying access patterns for the linear accelerator in University of Paris 11. So I was interested in that kind of work. I found out about this opportunity through the IBM career website, and then I applied through online. And that's how I started the job.
Great. And Rick, what's your background?
So I've received my master's in electrical engineering from the Eindhoven University of Technology in the Netherlands. I graduated in the fields of computer architecture and embedded systems. And during my studies, I actually spent 1 year in Zurich at the IBM Research Lab there. I did two internships there. I focused on cryptography accelerators and on designing a new programming language. And that was the time where I started to learn about the Dome project, and I got very interested in this, and that's where I decided to actually do a PhD in this project, and that's what I'm doing at the moment.
Great, yeah, so let's go into more detail now, and maybe Rick, you can start off. What specific projects on the Dome project are you working on?
So I'm part of the algorithms and machines part of the project. So what we really try to do is we want to create models and tooling to actually support the design space exploration for the square kilometer array. Basically, we want to figure out how can we really design the hardware and the software system both together to make sure that we get to an ideal platform. And one of the things I'm doing at the moment is I'm actually looking towards LOFAR, which is this radio telescope which has already been built here in the Netherlands. And I'm doing an analysis of this telescope to really figure out, well, do we understand the problems? What other problems do we have? And how can we learn from LOFAR, what they've built, and apply this towards a square kilometer array? And basically, especially because LOFAR is a pathfinder for the square kilometer array, and if we extend this, can we do that with the technologies they've used? Do we have to do things in a different way? Really ask questions like that.
Great. Jusik, and what part of the Dome project are you working on?
So I am working on the access pattern work package of the Dome project, which is basically designing the storage system that will be capable of storing the 1 petabyte per day that the after the data reduction for the SKA. So I'm involved in trying to find the most cost and energy efficient storage system design and by combining multiple device technologies. More specifically, we're trying to look at the access patterns for the on the applications by looking at how the applications interact with the data to find the best way to position the data across the store system so that we can have a very cost-efficient and energy-efficient storage system, yet meet all the requirements of the astronomical applications for the SKA.
Interesting. So, yeah, going to the next question, I mean, so what gets you out of bed in the morning? What keeps you guys excited about the project? Obviously, it's very challenging, but, yeah, what do you find interesting? Maybe, Yusuf, you can start off.
So the most interesting part about the Zone project for me is the multidisciplinary aspect of it. There are seven disciplines for the different work streams coming together to have a common goal of building this computer system that can for the SKA, and there are experts in many different every one of the fields that are involved, including my own. I learn from the all these experts every day, learn something new every day, and so every morning I wonder what I'll learn today.
Great. And Rick, what do you find interesting about the project?
I have to agree that that it's really multidisciplinary. It's amazing. I really have to get back to all my electrical engineering books, to also my signal processing theory, everything I got in at the university. It's amazing to get back to all those things. But one of the things I really, really like about the project is that, well, obviously, the Square Kilometer Array is a really big international project. It's going to be built by various institutes in the world, and you can really be a part of it and trying to make this thing happen, and that we can actually start building this.
Yeah, I agree with you. For the last question, guys, maybe you can give our participants a little bit of a taste of what it's like living in the Netherlands. Both of you are young scientists. Yusuf, can you give a little bit of a taste of what it's like to live in the Netherlands?
Sure. Well, here I can start off with, so I'm a foreigner in the Netherlands, so it might give some kind of perspective to the people, to the foreign applicants. Well, if we start off, the town of Dwingelo is a very quiet, submerged in nature, so if you're a nature type of person, you'll fit right in. Even if you're not, I mean, you're less than 2 hours away from Amsterdam, and like in 30 minutes you have like cities like very vibrant cities like Groningen, which Rick can elaborate on. Here, Dutch people are mostly very friendly, no language barriers, and culturally, the Dutch culture is very an interesting, unique culture that is very difficult to explain, so you'll have to see for yourself.
Excellent. And Rick, I believe you live in one of these local cities, right?
Yes, that's right. So I'm originally from the south of the Netherlands. I always lived in Eindhoven, and what I really, really wanted to look for was actually a student city. So Groningen, it's got the university. It's a very lively city. There are lots of students living there, approximately 30,000. So you also see that from the life in Groningen itself. There are various festivals. There's a very, very, not very, quite a few nice bars and nice places to go out. On the other side, it's a bit of an older city in the Netherlands, so the architecture is quite nice. It's really an amazing city to live. And I think there are various more colleagues here at Aston that are also living there. So once in a while we meet up in evenings to, celebrate somebody's birthday or do whatever. For the rest, I fill my personal time with rowing. So I joined the rowing club there to do some sports and to really be part of the city itself.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. I'm sure as we wrap up, some folks will have some more questions for you, so please stick around. Okay. Next, we're going to switch now to Ronald Leuten, who is one of the senior managers on the Dome project, and he is actually the hiring manager looking for these very unique skills for the Dome project. So, Ronald, maybe you can give our participants a little bit of a taste of what the job openings are and what skills you're seeking out.
Yes, thanks, Chris. To correct you, I am one of the hiring managers, not the hiring manager. Perhaps before I go into the skills, let me give you my perspective on the SKA. So to me, the SKA project is absolutely comparable to what is happening in CERN, In that we are going to build an instrument that is one of its kind. It takes a decade to plan, it takes about a decade to build, and it will run for 3 decades to do the science, where the science will be done by a global community, and the investment into this machine is huge, right? So the building of the instrument alone is currently estimated at 1.5 billion euros. And the actual construction will start in 2017, will finish in 2024. So you can actually make a career in SKA. Now, I've been working at IBM Research for 28 years and a bit, and I must say that without a doubt, this is the most exciting project that I have worked on. For me, the real challenge in SKA is one of scaling. So the interesting thing is that the SKA is using algorithms that are very well known. LOFAR, the instrument that Rick just mentioned, is operational. It was built by Astron, but that is only 1% of the, collecting area of SKA. And the scaling goes more than quadratically. So it will be more than 10,000 times as difficult to build SKA. So fundamentally, it's a problem of scaling. And to be very honest, today we actually don't know how to build SKA in a way that we can actually afford this, right? So Ton Engbersen mentioned if we just extrapolate based on today's technology, what energy we would use, it would be 7 gigawatts. And that is simply not an acceptable answer because we cannot pay the electricity bill to keep the machine running. So to go to more what we look for in terms of the number of people and the skills is we actually need to have breakthroughs on multiple dimensions in order to be able to figure out how to build SKA. So we're looking for people that can do out-of-the-box thinking, that are highly creative, that can do holistic thinking. And given the fact that it is a very multidisciplinary activity, we need people that are really good team players. And I think we are offering a very nice environment with many cultures, international team. And the aspect that I like about SKA is that it's also going to give us some answers on how the universe got formed. So it is somewhat easier to explain to your family who may not be so technical, you know, what your purpose is in this project. So you can just tell them, you know, I'm going to discover how you came to be. And you may then ask the question, why is IBM doing this? Well, the project that were chosen for DOME are roadmap technology development projects that are applicable both to the radio astronomy problem in SKA, but also for the IBM business needs that we see in the future. And so big data was mentioned once. I think that fundamentally this is a data problem everywhere. So it's data in terms of how we collect this, how we sample this, how we transport this, where we compute on this, and then finally how we store this and make this available to the science community around the planet. So I cannot go in too many details on all of the jobs given the time and that I manage 2 out of the 7 projects. So I can talk about what I need in terms of skills for the P1 project or the algorithms and machines, as well as the microserver project, which is P4. But we have a website where all the details for the open positions are available, and you see that on the slide 26, which is currently up. So in general, I think we need people that have good experience, skills in computer science, electrical engineering, hardware design, software design. System design skills are of good use. If you have an interest in radio astronomy, that certainly helps, right? So going to the job, which is the Alexander Machines, then basically what we're looking for is somebody who is applying the SKA case study in the tool that we're developing that was mentioned earlier, this holistic modeling tool, where people with either a PhD student or even with a PhD degree can apply. Here we basically need people that are really good at system design, people who can really dream math, right, so really versed in this. And if we can find somebody who also has a good, solid interest in photonics, that would also be really great. For P4, the microserver, we're looking for a pre-doc or a postdoc with good skills in being able to hack Linux kernels, to do networking, so in general software skills, but also a good affinity to hardware. So if we talk about you need to set a couple of bits in the register, that should not be a challenge. Benchmarking, system management is also required for that that position. So chart number 26 actually shows a map of the top section of Europe around the Netherlands, and you see the Netherlands there with Amsterdam and this symbol called A for Astrom, I guess, where the physical location is where we are hiring. There are good train connections from Amsterdam to go there, so that's easily accessible. And the best way to apply is to on this website, www.zurich.ibm.com/astron, you'll find a link on the page on the right-hand side that says Submit My Resume. So there you can click on the job that you find interesting and add your resume and some other details, submit, and then we will take a serious look at what you write there.
Great. Thanks, Ronald. So that wraps up the formal part of our agenda, and now we can open it up to Q&A. I know many of you are participating via PC, and you're listening to this conference through your speakers on your computer. So on the right-hand side, you can post some questions in the chat. And for folks on the phone, I'll ask the operator to explain how you can ask questions over the phone.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your line, and record your name. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your line, and record your name.
So we have one question that came through the chat, and the question is, how quickly will we get a response after somebody submits their resume? Someone in the room, perhaps?
And so we're really interested to get as soon as possible in contact with you and to discuss a lot of things one-to-one. So depending on how many CVs we will get, but I think in the next few days we will have the first look, so that it's possible that you will get an answer in the next week.
Excellent. Thanks, Oliver. We have another question that's coming up in the chat. Are these positions also open for people with a master's degree?
Yes, for what we call a pre-doc or a PhD student, the requirement is that you have a master's degree. So the answer is yes.
Excellent. And now we have another question in the chat regarding big data. What will be the parsing method to make all the big data meaningful?
That is a very, very difficult question, I think, where fundamentally we don't have yet the answer to that. I would actually say you have to think of this here as the antennas receive something which is almost only noise. And when you correlate all the antennas, then you actually might find out that not all the signals were noise, but you have to correlate them, right? And when you have half a million antennas, then you correlate half a million antennas with each other. That is part of the difficulty, part of the problem. And then out of that comes information which, with established algorithms which astronomers have used and looked at, we try to find out whether there is something interesting here. Now, in the past, very often what happened is that we made a map where we printed a map of what we saw, and the astronomers looked at this, I would say, false color map and decided, yeah, there is something interesting. Today, and maybe for the SKA, maybe we actually need a computer system which looks at the data and decides whether there is something useful or interesting to look at. Because there is so much data that we probably don't have enough astronomers in the world to look at all the data. I hope that answered the question a little bit, but I don't think that we have the algorithm already casted in concrete how to do that.
Great. We have another question regarding, is it possible to do short-term internships?
Yes, it is also possible to do short-term internships. We currently have a 6-month internship position open, so also feel free to submit your CV, just remarking that you're interested in an internship.
We have another question. Are the pre-doc positions related to a given university, or does one have to look for a university and supervisor by themselves?
So typically the way that we at IBM deal with it is that the PhD student is responsible to find the university and professor him or herself, but we definitely give help and guidance in this, but we don't dictate this. So there is plenty of flexibility there.
We have another question coming in. How many job openings are there on the project, and how big is the team?
So the current team between IBM and Astron is like 25 people, and we will grow that by another 6-7. So we currently have 6 job openings, but there will be some more phasing up of things over the next couple of years. So I think finally we'll get to a team of like 35 people working just on the Dome project between IBM and Astron.
Great. We have a question here about Watson. Will we be using Watson to analyze all of the data?
That is currently not our plan, but I do suggest you submit your resume because you're doing out-of-the-box thinking. I like that.
We have another question here. What kinds of computing power are required to process all of the information?
So if we were to use standard supercomputers to process the data, which is not a good idea, but just to get a feel, we would need, I think, in the order of 4 to 8 exascale machines. Now, an exascale machine does not exist today. The HPC community is planning to build one, according to the earliest expectations, would be available around 2018. Practically, it will probably be more like 2020. But there will be only one machine like that, and definitely not 10. And definitely, these machines would not be dedicated for SKA because the cost would be through the roof. So that's an example of why we need this fundamental innovation and breakthroughs to solve this.
Great. I have another question. If someone is in their last semester of master's, is it okay for them to apply? Do they reduce their chances of consideration?
I think this is the right time to apply for a PhD position, yes.
Yeah.
So,
right. If someone is interested in big data, should they also apply?
Definitely.
Another question. Storing the data in distributed formats,
have we explored Hadoop, Hive, NoSQL, and are we using existing storage technologies from IBM?
I don't think that Hadoop is really that applicable, but we are looking at all forms of being able to store data, yes.
And from a storage technology, are we looking at existing IBM storage technologies?
In some sense, we extend the current existing technologies, right? So tape was mentioned. The new thing would be storage class memory. And traditional hard drives can also be used.
That's right. But there is not necessarily an focus on that we have to use IBM technology, right? This is a more fundamental, call it a more fundamental research project than that we take here off-the-shelf IBM technology and say that is what it should be.
Great. I just got another question here. Are there going to be positions that are open on the Astron side for people with less skills in electrical engineering and signal processing and maybe more in astronomy?
Maybe I should answer that question. We normally have regular positions in astronomy and other fields. So I encourage you to check our website for positions. I didn't check it today, but we regularly have openings for other positions.
Great. Operator, any questions in the queue on the phone?
Once again, if you would like to ask a question on the phone lines, please press star 1, unmute your line, and record your name.
We got one more question coming in from the chat. What specialty should have a candidate for these job openings?
Again, the best is that you just look on the website where there are very detailed skill and job descriptions that will indicate what specialties are required.
But I think in addition to this, we are looking for really high passion and people who are able to think outside of the box.
For the access pattern opening, some of the techniques that I use on a daily basis is statistics geared toward machine learning, some simulation, mathematical programming, queuing theory, and some operating system knowledge, among many other things. So, yeah.
So when you have all of that, you're an outstanding candidate, right?
I got two more questions coming in, guys. How is the reaching power of the SKA receiving signals? It has the capability of receiving what kind of signals?
The SKA is just receiving radio signals out of space in the range of slightly over 70 megahertz all the way to 10, maybe 20 gigahertz. And we have different antenna systems for the different, I would say, for the different large bands. So for the band which is roughly below 400, I think it is 400 megahertz, we have sparse aperture arrays. And then for the higher bands up to about 3 gigahertz, we do more dense aperture arrays. And then over 3 gigahertz, that is really the range where we think that it will be most appropriate to have dishes. Now, this is not cast in concrete. This is something which is being discussed and decided as we're going. There are several experiments going on to find out what is the best way and the most economical way, both from power and from constructing it, and power being total cost of ownership, how to operate it, etc., over the years.
We just got another question coming in. It says, I am working as an assistant professor of electronics and working on molecular electronics for high-speed applications. How can I contribute in this project? He's already submitted his CV. Are there any other ways for him to contribute?
So the other ways to contribute if you are not applying for a job is to think about joining the DOME user platform. right? So for especially for universities, but also for companies, we have the user platform there to be able to contribute in your area of interest to the Dome platform, but also to benefit from the innovation that is being done within that Dome project.
Great. We have another question that just came in. Are skills related to RF microwave engineering useful at a PhD level?
Gerald Young. Young Gerald, can you answer that question?
Yeah, I think the answer will be yes, of course. RF and microwave engineering will be useful, but I have to give you a but as well. I'm a microwave engineer, and if you've been in microwave engineering for some time, it is a difficult switch to high performance computing or software or anything related to these positions. The photonic position, by the way, is closer to microwave knowledge and closer to hardware. So maybe David should apply for that position, and we certainly will consider that.
Right. And we have a question maybe for Oliver regarding salary. What is the approximate salary for the photonics tech R&D engineer and other positions? Is it closer to industry or to academic levels?
So the individual salary is depending on the job role and your skill set. But, you know, our salary level is linked to the academic and astronaut as well. So I think it is more compared to the industrial market.
Right. Excellent. I don't see any other questions coming in the chat. Does anyone else have any other questions?
We do have a question on the phone line. Would you like to take that?
Sure.
Okay. If you ask a question, your line is now open. Yes, your line is open. You may ask your question.
Oh, hi. My name is Abhinashar Tomar, and I saw the vacancies on the project website, but... Currently, as I see them, they are more like signal processing or electrical engineer-related positions. Do we have anything more related to computation, students for computational majors? As we talked about that, this is like the ultimate challenge for big data, but the positions that I see right now, they are mainly... they are closely connected to establishing the infrastructure for processing data, but would there be any roles for computational major students which are more related to regarding developing the algorithms for handling that data rather than the infrastructure? That is my question for now. And congratulations on this big project. This is really awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So definitely, yes, I think within the algorithms and machines, we are addressing exactly how to deal with big data, develop new algorithms on how to do that, and do design space exploration on how to build the best architecture for SKA, but also the best architecture for big data machines within IBM. So that would be the place for you to submit your CV. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for your question. We got two more questions that came in. Would you support a collaboration for an internship towards a master's thesis in the field of big data?
Yes.
Short and sweet. More of a technical question. Will the data be stored for each antenna of the SK?
No, I hope not.
Nope.
because then we have to store the 14 exabytes per day.
So part of the project will involve developing smarter ways to filter out what data we keep and what data we don't keep. Another technical question. What other achievements are you hoping to find besides recreating the Big Bang? Green computing, faster storage, et cetera?
I think the achievement which we like to achieve, which we like to see, is that we are able at the end of the run to very efficiently build systems which can deal with big data analysis, with big data storage, with big data processing.
Another way you can look at it is to say, if you look at the way that we currently build data centers and you take a current data center and you say this has a performance of X and a energy consumption of Y, then we hope to get to keep the performance at X and get the energy consumption down by a factor of 100, right? And that will have a big impact on our society.
Great. Any other calls, any other questions from the phone operator?
We have no further questions at this time.
Wait, just one more question just came in, guys. I'm a PhD student in Brazil. My line of research involves intelligent systems, semantic web, and open data. Any chance along these lines for an interest in the Dome project? I think we'll...
It depends a little bit in what you have done in your PhD. I think what you can do is just send your resume, and we'll promise you we'll take a good look at that. And when you're a PhD student, I assume that at some point you will finish your PhD. So as a postdoc, this would be a potential job offering or job opening which we can think about. But it really depends a little bit more on the details, because intelligent systems, semantic web, and open data are, of course, very high-level concepts.
And a more technical question also, do you have any preferred accelerator architectures, or are you looking at everything under the sun?
For the time being, I would say we are looking at everything under the sun, but we are certainly looking at graphics processors, whether that is the right approach. We're certainly looking at field programmable gate arrays, whether that's the right approach. And we are looking at some of our own technology where we have been playing around with for a couple of years, whether that might help. But it is really open in the sense that we have to solve a not everyday problem. As Ronald just said, a factor of 100 less in
energy
consumption, that is the minimum.
So I don't have a preferred architecture, but I do have some suggestions on where to start when you think about accelerators. So my view is we should start at the data and not at compute, and we should look at it from like a data flow perspective rather than the old traditional Van Neumann way of thinking.
Great, and two last questions it looks like came in. Do we provide any training programs for data analysis to the candidates who have a keen interest and want to contribute?
I think we need to think about that one. It's an interesting question. So send us your CV, and we'll have a discussion.
Excellent. And I guess just to end up, what sparked the idea for the Dome project?
Well, I actually am substantially responsible for you know, getting this whole idea of the Dome together. I discovered the SKA project idea about 10 years ago, and quickly found out through very capable IBMers in the Netherlands. And by the way, I'm Dutch as well, although I've worked here in Switzerland for 28 years. And but I kept my ties to the Holland intact. And I discovered that Astron is actually a world-renowned institute. And that to me looked like a good way to get involved with SKA. So over the past 8 years, I have made three attempts to get engaged with Astron in some formal project. And in the third attempt, it finally came together, where about 2.5 years ago, we had a meeting, a fundamental meeting with the director of Astron here in our lab. And various projects were discussed on how we might help the challenge of SKA, and that is how this all got together. So the spark, I think, happened at multiple places around the same time, but it was having the right people with, you know, similar ideas at the same time, at the same place, that really made this happen.
We had one other question that just snuck in. Are we considering working with other sites that have radio telescopes? Maybe Jan Albert, you can comment?
All right. Jan Carroll, yes.
Yeah.
Well, ASTOND works with other radio telescopes more than only the SKA. So I already mentioned the LOFO telescope, but also we have tight relations with a telescope telescopes in Australia that are currently in operation, and we certainly will plan to share software and hardware ideas with other institutes. So the answer is yes.
Great.
Yeah, even in DOME, we just, I think 2 weeks ago, we announced that we have now DOME South Africa that is being extended into the program, where we formalize the collaboration with the South African team.
Excellent. Operator, any last calls on the any last questions on the phones?
We have no further questions at this time.
Great. Thanks. I appreciate everyone that participated in asking questions. We look forward to seeing your resumes, and maybe look forward to working with you someday. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for participating in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.